Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Starting late here in the Shame-Free Zone. My apologies to any of you that tuned in 11 minutes ago. Guess what? We've got power outages going all over the place here. I've actually been out of power for a couple of days. I'm working off of a backup generator. And my phone just died like 5 minutes before airtime. So I'm talking to you on Skype. That usually is not a problem, but I'm located way up in the woods here where it is on satellite. That means there's a bit of a delay. And as it would happen, my good friend Eric, who's up in Seattle, his phone just died tonight too. So I don't know who is trying to work against us on this show, but we're going to do it anyway. And we hope you'll bear with us on the fact that there's just going to be a little bit of a delay here between when I talk and when Eric talks. So you're just going to have to pretend that you are watching one of those CNN remotes from Saudi Arabia. Okay? All right. We've actually got a very, very good topic for you tonight, and we're doing part two of Sacred Sex. Eric, thank you so much for being a trooper and deciding to go ahead and do it on your mobile and deal with this delay that I've got on Skype. Appreciate it. Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone.
Thanks, Veronica. I'm glad to be here.
Now, I understand you had a lot of follow-up questions for me after we did the episode on sacred sex, because I have this tendency sometimes to be a little ethereal, and I don't get the specifics about how does one do sacred sex. So I'm actually going to let you kick this show off with, you know, whatever question you want to pull out of your hat off the bat, and let's see where it takes us.
Well, yeah, last time we spoke a lot about sacredness and sexuality, but we never spoke about how you do that with another person. And I might be prejudiced, but I like doing sex with other people. So that's where I want to start. You can really get so into another's heart and being that sex becomes sacred, even with another person.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the short answer, but I'm thinking you want the long answer.
Sounds good.
Well, okay.
What does it take?
Go ahead.
What does it take for two people to get so joined or whatever that sex becomes sacred?
Well, first, a couple of things. I just want to refresh our listeners' mind to some of the basic tenets about sacred sex that I talked about last time. And one thing that's really important is that I actually consider all consensual adult sex to be sacred sex. So I don't like to set up hierarchies or certain bars of achievement where people feel frustrated and thinking, oh, I'm just having, you know, profane sex. I want to have sacred sex. Sex in itself is sacred, just like life is sacred. However, there are certain experiences which certainly eclipse other experiences. We've all had sex that maybe was a little bit boring or fell flat for us. And, of course, there's that old adage that all sex, even bad sex, is better than no sex. If I would agree with that, sometimes bad sex is just bad sex. But sacred sex, sacred sex takes us to a plane where I think the ancients termed it very well when they said that sex could be a doorway to the divine. And this is the place where spirituality and sexuality actually become so intertwined that it's kind of hard to tell which is which. And frankly, I think they are one and the same, or at least sides of the same coin. Now, this can happen spontaneously, and there's actually a book that I mentioned the last time you and I had this conversation, Transcendent Sex by Dr. Jenny Wade. Great book. Details the transcendent sexual experiences of ordinary people who had absolutely no training in meditation, yoga, tantric sex, or anything of the kind, and just had a spontaneous sacred sex experience, which sometimes was something that happened with a total stranger. Now, for the most part, it seemed like most of the incidences that she chronicled really did take place between long-term partners. However, there were a fair number of incidences that took place between strangers, even, you know, a situation where somebody had picked up another person in a bar. So I think that's really telling, and what it communicates to me is that sex is actually meant to be sacred. That's kind of its default setting, and we've had to work really hard in Western culture to take it out of that realm and to turn it into something that is, you know, strictly about the body and has no emotional or spiritual dimension to it. I think that's very unfortunate, and I think it's led to a lot of sexual dysfunction and frustration. But if, you know, we're starting where we are, which is basically that we've been treating sex as kind of a bodily function, you know, I hate to be really crass here, but sometimes people treat their sex life kind of like going to the bathroom or eating. They just consider it one of those utilitarian needs that they have to do in order to answer the body's drives. And that is definitely not the frame of mind that you want to have if you are pursuing sacred sex. You want, first and foremost, to just open yourself up to the idea that sex can be sacred. And that sometimes requires getting past a little bit of cultural training. You might be, you know, kind of weighed down with guilt and shame. And if you are, it's very difficult to move into this area where you would entertain the idea that sex could be sacred. But we also have to kind of go further and just, you know, like, what is sacred? I think that that varies from person to person. For most of us, I think it does denote a certain sense of specialness, maybe a sense of being solemn, or an ecstatic, spiritual celebration. It depends, right? You know, for some of us, we want, ritual when, you know, it's kind of like going to church. Some people, like, I had a grandmother who was a Mormon, and it was very, staid and proper church services. Everybody kind of sat still and folded their hands, and they dressed very nicely. And then I had another grandmother who was a Assembly of God, Holy Roller. And for her, you go to church, you stand up, and you sing, and you testify, and you raise your hands up in the air, and say, "Thank you, Jesus, praise the Lord." And then maybe you fall backwards and speak in tongues. So not unlike religious worship, I think sacred sex and what that means varies from person to person. How you get there varies too. But being open to the idea that a spiritual experience can actually come through the sexual union is the first step. Now, there's other steps, but before I move on, I want to actually give you a chance to ask me for clarification in case, even though I've been verbose here, I've missed a few points.
Well, I think your point is well taken, that the sacred's out there and people get to it in all different kinds of ways. I liked what you said about sacredness is the default setting, as in all life is sacred. I mean, that's really the approach I think we need to take, that everything we do can be sacred or should be sacred. And so what's holding us back? over to you.
Okay. Well, a lot of times, I think first and foremost, the thing that holds us back is the fear of being wide awake. A lot of us are actually kind of sleepwalking through life. We've tamped down our natures. A lot of that is accomplished for us. And another great book out there, Thou Shalt Not Be Aware by Alice Miller. I'm a huge fan of her work. And, the whole idea that we are passing this on from generation to generation, very much this attitude that you shouldn't ask questions and you shouldn't have an independent spirit and you can't trust your own five senses. You've got to believe what the authority figures tell you is true and then submit to that authority. And it's really convenient for the people who are really at the top of the food chain here and have got a lot of power and a lot of money, because they want to have voters and employees and citizens who will take orders and do as they're told. And this, I think, is one of the reasons that sex in general is so heavily controlled by both religions and governments, because when people are in touch with their own sacredness and their own sexual voice, they're not so easily controlled. They're not so easily led. So in a lot of ways, if you want to open that door to sacred sex, you have to become a bit of a rebel. You got to look back in history and in time to another time and place when, sacred sex really was just, an accepted practice. You know, you can look to, rituals like Beltane. It was a pagan ritual where people would actually go out and have copulate in the fields, and they really felt that having sex in the fields would fertilize the crop. Kind of hard to even imagine all the people in your neighborhood going out to fertilize the crops with sex, isn't it?
Well, it's worth a try.
Yeah, but seriously, I mean, can you imagine that happening in your neighborhood?
Not in my neighborhood.
I can't see my neighbors. Yeah, exactly. So we've really changed a lot in a few thousand years. We really have. That was actually considered acceptable practice not that long ago. I mean, they were actually writing things down. So it doesn't even predate written history. So historically, it's really nice to get in touch with what happened before. I think it opens up our minds and gets us to thinking about the fact that we've got some really kind of silly ideas about sex at this time. And another story that's coming to mind for me is the Epic of Gilgamesh. The Epic of Gilgamesh is purported to be the first written story ever told, and the first one ever committed to. I think actually this predates paper and ink, so it's not like they wrote it down with paper and ink, but they did write it down. They recorded it. So this is when we make that transition from oral history, which is, you know, there's a long tradition of humans passing their stories down around the campfire, to actually recording a story. And the very first story told was really about how sex civilizes the human being. So it's all about this king who finds a wild man in the forest, and he's copulating with the animals, and he's, you know, running around naked on all fours and lapping water from his, you know, like a dog would. And so the king wants him to become a human being, and so what he does is he puts him with a sacred prostitute, a courtesan, who then has sex with him for like 5 or 7 days. I can't remember how long it was, but it was a long time. And he turns into a man. He becomes civilized. Now, you know, again, we don't really have that in our culture to believe that sex could civilize you. As a matter of fact, we have the opposite paradigm, which is that sex turns you into an animal. And, of course, we've denigrated that term, you know, so that it's a bad thing to be like an animal, which I don't agree with. But I'm going to read a couple of things off of Facebook here. I think people were trying to be humorous, which again suggests to me that it's very difficult for people to take the whole idea of sacred sex seriously. But Paul says, sacred sex is when one partner yells, God is nothing sacred anymore. It is at the moment that you have achieved sacred sex. Yeah, and then Bob says, I thought I was sneaking into a church I thought it was sneaking into a church and doing the nasty on the altar.
I've always wanted to do that. Always.
Well, just think, there was probably a time when that would have actually been a pretty cool thing to do in church. But what kind of a church were you raised in, Eric?
I was raised in a Lutheran church, American Lutheran church, you know, very staid, but you know, the sanctuary, the church, and especially the altar in front, that was a place of real power. And I always thought, you know, even as a good Christian young man, that, man, wouldn't it be something right there?
I think it sounds pretty awesome. I can remember going to the Stanford Chapel, which is just, it's got beautiful stained glass everywhere. And they have a beautiful stained glass ceiling. And I used to, like, kind of lean back in the chairs and look up at that and go, wow, this would be a great place to have sex. So I'm wondering if that's kind of a common thought.
We're two for two so far.
So, actually three for three. Don't forget Bob. It was his idea. The second step. So, okay. So the first thing is, you know, to actually open your mind to the idea that sex could be sacred and to set your intention for that. And as part of that, you want to learn something about history because it really starts to push at our paradigm and help us to expand that. And then the second thing is the breath, because remember I said that the culture doesn't want you to be fully awake and fully alive. One of the ways that we achieve that is that most of us are only using the top one-third of our lungs. So we're literally not engaging with life fully by breathing into life. And I often find myself doing this just out of force of habit. I would get very much focused on tasks that I'm accomplishing. And if they happen to be the kind of tasks that take place in front of a computer or on a telephone, I will find myself tamping down my breathing so that I'm not really expanding my lungs. If I go outside and I'm doing, you know, something that requires physical labor, then I'm fully engaged and I'm breathing all of, you know, to the capacity of my lungs, and it's an awesome thing. But most of us are spending an awful lot of time at desks, in front of computers, or on our phones, texting, you know, talking, whatever. And vast majority of us are not really breathing fully. And so I don't know what it was like, you know, thousands and thousands of years ago. I suspect that nobody had to teach us conscious breathing. I'm thinking we probably just did it normally. And the reason I assume that is because when I look around at wildlife and even domestic animals, I see a lot of breathing going on. They just breathe. That's what you do. From the moment you're born until the moment that you die, you're going to breathe. But a lot of us are having to learn how to breathe properly. We're going to learn how to, you know, fill our lungs. And the first time you do it, it actually feels kind of scary. And sometimes it hurts. Sometimes the lungs have not expanded that much. So you actually feel a little tearing almost in the lung tissue. And sometimes your nose is not used to processing that much oxygen, and your nose will actually start to burn. So getting past that is really huge on your way to sacred sex. And I really recommend taking up meditation, yoga, conscious breathing exercises. There's books devoted to teaching conscious breathing. But I can you know, basically, you know, give the basics of it here, which is that you're going to breathe in through your nose and you're going to blow out through your mouth. And that may not be the way that you want to breathe all the time, but when you are specifically doing conscious breathing, it's a great way to get your energy up and to really feel engaged fully with life and to raise your energy. So that's the second step, which is conscious breathing. And again, since we're on Skype here, I'm taking these planned breaks. So Eric, back to you. What do you do you have any questions about that, about conscious breathing?
No, not per se, but yeah, I'd love to hear more about, I mean, like if you looked at your honey over the breakfast table and said, honey, tonight we're touching the face of God, is there anything through the course of, like, the day that you would do to get ready? Or, yeah, let me leave it at that.
Over the course of the day when you're not actually with each other. I just want to clarify. Is that what you mean? So you're like you're at work and she's at work or something like that to kind of help me understand the scenario?
Well, yes. I mean, is it even reasonable to worry about it that far in advance or what?
You know, the first thing that comes to my mind is, well, yes, you could start preparing, and I might personally prepare by making sure that I'm breathing throughout the day. The other thing that I didn't mention about conscious breathing, one of the reasons it's scary is because it brings up a lot of emotions. So if you are wanting to connect with your lover in this way and you've got a backlog of unresolved issues, it can be a little bit difficult. Sometimes it's good to get closure around, you know, issues that have been tabled in the past. And if there's too many of them, you don't want to do them all before you get to go have your sacred sex experience, then I think it's at least good to have a meeting with your partner and let them know the issues that are up for you and make an appointment about how you're going to problem solve those at a later time. Because what that does is it puts it on an emotional back burner where you already know that that situation is handled. You haven't actually had the conversation yet, but you know when it's going to take place. There's a certain amount of catharsis that happens just in expressing that this is a concern for me and I do want to talk about it at some time. And getting your partner's agreement that, yes, they're available to have that conversation. And what we're really trying to do here is build some trust so that the intimacy can be increased, so that there's more connection, compassion. All of these things really work well in concert with sacred sex. I'm not saying you have to have them as a prerequisite, but for a long-term relationship, I would sure recommend it. That's one of the advantages about having a sacred sex experience with a total stranger is you don't have all this backlog of issues. You can pretend that the person that you're with really is a god or goddess incarnate. And, you know, you can project all of your fantasies on them. Yeah. But, you know, if you – I'm sorry, Eric, what'd you say?
I just said, oh, dear, what a load to put on someone. But they can walk away from it.
Well, there, in sacred sex, it really is a good place to suspend some of the judgments that we have about our partner or even some of the things that we know to be true about them. You know, we know about their foibles and their character defects or whatever term you want to put on that. Sometimes it's actually very helpful to think about them as kind of being the embodiment of a god or a goddess. Now, I didn't invent that. That's actually – this is borrowing a concept from the ancients. It's also a technique that is used a lot of times in sex sex magic, which you might or might not consider a form of sacred sex. I think that it could be considered a form of sacred sex just because people are setting their intention to create something magical. I'm not always right on board with the whole magic thing. Not sure how much of that I believe in. But I will say this. I think that sex has a lot of power in it, and that if you do set your intention to affirm something or to create something as a result of having a sacred sex experience, that that's a very powerful affirmation. And it could be that there would be a magical component to it. But I will not delve too far into the sex magic thing because I don't consider myself an expert on it. I just want to broach that topic and say that, you know, in my opinion, that is an aspect of sacred sex. So if sacred sex is the big container that holds sex magic and tantra and, you know, pagan rituals like Beltane, then each one of these becomes a type of sacred sex. And it's up to us to decide what fits for us. In pagan ceremonies, they have their rituals. Tantra relies very much on breath and eye gazing, aligning the chakras. I'm a little more versed in tantra, so I'm going to talk about that, but I want just to make sure the listeners know, and that you know, Eric, that it's actually a really broad topic that has a lot of different disciplines to it. So as far as the more tantric path, and again, I got to be careful about the terminology here because there's going to be people listening who are probably going to say, well, that's not tantra as I know it. And there are really a lot of different branches of tantra. So, and it seems that some of them are really quite intent on owning that word. And I think the term's big enough that it really can accommodate a lot of different interpretations on tantra. But what I've experienced around tantric sex is very much first about learning how to connect with the breath and then aligning the chakras, eye gazing. So let's say that you're having missionary-style sex. And, you know, I think I'm kind of speeding past your question about preparing for it beforehand. So let me just say, other than knowing how to do conscious breathing, contracting your PC muscles, this is a skill that you're going to want. So having that skill set of being able to do conscious breathing and practicing that through meditation, exercising your PC muscles, short for pubococcygeal muscles, you want to learn how to do that and make sure that you can bring those skill sets to a sacred sex interaction. Other than that, I think a lot of it is really learning how to let go. So if you've spent the whole day worrying about it and planning for it, it might actually be counterproductive. You might want to instead practice letting go and turning it over and suspending your expectations and simply focusing on, you know, the connection and making yourself available. Those things are much more important. The backlog of emotional baggage that a lot of couples have can really, really wreak havoc when you're trying to move towards a sacred sex experience because you haven't done your homework. So that's really the homework, which is learn PC control, learn conscious breathing, and then deal with the conflicts that are coming up in the relationship, if there are any. Let's say there's not, and let's say you're actually going to engage in this with somebody that you don't have any prior history with and you don't have any issues with, then I would recommend dealing with some of your own issues with yourself. Because sacred sex is going to take you to a place that is more intimate with yourself as well. And if that scares you, you're probably going to throw up some barriers to it and back away. So we're kind of back to that whole thing about being conscious and awake. How much awareness can you handle? How awake and alive can you allow yourself to be? And believe it or not, That's much scarier for most of us than having a boring or mundane sexual experience. Being fully awake and fully alive is frightening because you're going to meet yourself in the process. Okay, so before I actually give some specific techniques, any questions about what I've offered so far?
On that last, that was a question I was going to have. You know, I mean, most imperfect people have a certain fear of venturing into the presence of the sacred. And so thank you for touching on that, on being, on finding out who you are and at least coming through initial terms with how you're approaching life. It was also eye-opening for me for you to say that we should suspend judgment of our partners and look at them as what I expected was look at them as an embodiment of the divine. I had thought we were talking about using sex as a way to hopscotch into the divine, but it sounds more like you should turn and look beside you and find that your partner herself or himself is as good an embodiment of the divine as you might find on this planet. Is that where you're going?
Absolutely. Very, you know, you want to learn to see the divine in everything, in the family pet, in the neighbor that you don't get along with, in the people that are sitting in the cars next to you in traffic. If you can shift your focus so that you, you know, realize that we're really having a spiritual journey with a whole bunch of other spirit beings. And we just happen to be running around in these bodies, making fools of ourselves. But there really is something much more sacred and much more divine going on here. And if you can see that, then you can start to see it in yourself too, and vice versa. When you start seeing it in yourself, it's easier to see it in others. And I think when you really start to acknowledge that, then you're very much well on your way to realizing that sex is also sacred. But this division that we have, like some people are special and some people aren't, you know, it's really just kind of a reflection of how we view ourselves. Like we'll say, well, I really value this part of me, but this part of me sucks. And those kind of divisions are painful, first and foremost. And then second of all, yeah, it becomes difficult for you to see how you can create a sacred experience while you're still in a physical body, while you're still talking to another human being who has problems and defects. Or, you know, that's a word I use because I come from the 12-step model. A lot of people don't like the word defects. So whatever, hang-ups, bad habits, you know. Whatever it is that, you know, turns you off or frustrates you about the person that's in front of you. And sometimes that's you. You're looking in the mirror and you're turned off and frustrated by the person that you see in the mirror. So, yes, I would say you want to start even thinking of yourself in that way. I think when I was escorting, one of the things that I focused on was seeing myself as a sacred prostitute and seeing myself as an embodiment of the goddess. You know, and there's a lot of different goddesses out there to choose from. I was always enamored with one called Lilith.
Lilith, all right.
Lilith is, yes, you've heard me talk about Lilith before. She's rebellious and she rebelled against God. And that just suits me fine. That's great for me. That's my idea of a goddess. But, whatever your concept is, to be able to see that in yourself, you know, once I started being able to see myself in that way, it was so much easier for me to extend that to my clients. And, you know, a lot of times when I was with clients, I was having a sacred sex experience because I was really envisioning myself as the goddess incarnate, and I was envisioning them as the sacred embodiment of you know, a god figure. That doesn't mean that I ever got confused and thought that that any of that was literal, but it was a beautiful metaphor for really focusing in on the part of each of us that is sacred. And I could be with somebody that I might actually not agree with their politics. I might find some of the things that they're doing on planet Earth really quite distasteful. But in that moment, I could find something about them that was pure, that was perfect, that was good. And I would focus on that. And it's amazing. The things you focus on multiply. So if you focus on what is good and right and pure in yourself and in your partner, it multiplies. It becomes more pronounced. And I think that's a spiritual transformation right there. And Eric, what do you think?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was writing that down. Yes.
I can hear your keyboard busy working there.
No, that.
Which I flattered. I flattered, by the way, but I said the things that you focus on multiply. So if you focus on what is sacred in yourself and in the person in front of you, it actually multiplies. And I do believe that that right there is a very spiritual experience.
Yeah.
And I wondered what. Yes.
I think that's the essence.
That's okay. Go ahead.
I mean, that's the very core of all the religions that we have on this planet, is that God reaches out and touches what is good and right and pure in us, and it multiplies. And then we're supposed to go and do likewise. So, yeah, that's nice. I like that.
Good. You liked it so much you were writing it down, and I'm glad you were. But there for a minute we lost you. and I'm okay doing a monologue, but I'd rather have you here doing the show with me.
Okay.
You had asked about some very specifics. So I just want to preface that there's a lot of different ways to do sacred sex, and sometimes it's by just accident, you know. People haven't planned it ahead at all, and they don't have a particular ritual. And then there's a lot of different rituals out there. But I like this particular way of doing it, which I call tantric. And like I said, anybody who thinks they've got the pipeline to tantra and wants to disagree with me, feel free. But the conscious breathing, the contraction of the PC muscles, I like face-to-face, which is very much how the bonobos do it. You know, you've heard me talk about the bonobos. They're like chimpanzees, only they love sex and they're not violent. And they have a lot of face-to-face sex. What's great about face-to-face sex in this particular type of sacred sex is that you're able to align your heart chakras and you're also able to share breath. So when you breathe in, your partner breathes out. And when you breathe out, your partner breathes in. And so, you know, you're breathing in through your nose, and you would be breathing the air that is coming out of your partner's mouth, and then you are blowing your air out through your mouth, and at that point your partner is breathing it in through their nose. And this creates a circle of energy. And your heart chakra is aligned, so that is like in the middle of your chest. Energy starts to flow between those two places, so now you're sharing energy that way. And since you're face-to-face, you're able to eye gaze. And usually you're a little too close to look at both eyeballs, so you're going to have to pick one. Some people choose to focus on the left eye. I don't really think it matters. Some people think it does. Whatever. Pick an eyeball. and you gaze into your partner's eye. You're breathing, circulating each other's breath. Your heart chakras are aligned. And consequently, usually your sex organs are aligned as well. Now, you may or may not actually be penetrating, if, you know, if that's even an option. And in almost all cases it is. If you're, you know, a lesbian couple, you can use a strap-on. If you're gay, certainly you can do anal sex from that position. And if you're heterosexual, you can do vaginal sex or anal sex. But penetration is a possibility. It is recommended sometimes that you take a long time to penetrate, so maybe you wouldn't actually want to do penetration right off. I actually had an experience where it took 3 days to achieve full penetration. Doesn't mean we were actually in that position for 3 solid days. It just means that for 3 days. Okay. I don't have that much stamina. I hear Sting does, but I don't. It was, however, an extended and very slow-moving process, and what I found was that it really starts to raise something that's called kundalini energy. It's very, very powerful. And again, not always important what kind of a connection with you that you have with this particular partner. In my case, I was not in a extended relationship. I can't say that there was a real meeting of the minds or the hearts here, but because of the fact that we were doing this particular technique, it worked anyway. So that becomes my recommendation, which is don't wait to, you know, find the right partner, and don't wait until you think you and your partner are perfect people. You can start experimenting with these sexual activities and see where it takes you, you know, and it's going to be different for all of us. You know, my partner did not have the same experience that I had. In my case, it was a male, and he had his experience, which was, to quote what he said, that, you know, it seemed like we became one there for a moment. In my case, I actually had a kundalini activation. I ended up being in a state of bliss for an entire month, and that had nothing to do with my connection with this person. That had everything to do with my connection with myself and with spirit. So I just, you know, I want to put that out there too. In the book Transcendent Sex, Jenny Wade actually talks about some people who had transcendent experiences and their partner did not. So it's not crucial that your partner show up and be on board for all of this and even believe in it. You can have it with a partner who doesn't go there with you. It's possible. I think it's better, though, if you and your partner can be on the same page and have the same experience. So just to recap, Eric, we're sharing our breath, circulating it as a matter of fact. We are eye-gazing. We are aligning our heart chakras. We are contracting our PC muscles. And we are taking an extended period of time to merge the genitals, if in fact that's what you decide to do. It's not necessary to have a sacred sexual experience to have genital contact, but if you do decide to do that, then I recommend going very, very slow so that your focus stays on the energy and the breath and the connection, and that you don't get swept away with things like friction. You know, at least not too soon. At least not too soon. The ancient. Well, you know, some tantric texts would actually recommend that the lingam and the yoni. So a lot of tantra was geared towards heterosexual sex, and the lingam is the penis, and the yoni is the vulva or vagina. And they would recommend that one take basically no action to create a merging there and just wait for them to kind of meld together. Not entirely sure how one would affect that, but that was something that's recommended by, yeah, So there's something to be said for the slowing down and just really staying with the energy. Okay, so questions at this point.
Just a flashback. I've gotten to this point before, and freaked out because it felt too naked. It felt like she could see everything, and that shamed me. And so I guess that goes back to the unresolved issues.
Yeah. You know, and thank you for sharing that too, because I think that happens for a lot of us. It happens before we're even cognizant of it. And that you have an awareness around that, I think is profound. I think that's awesome. And you've knocked on that door and then backed away from it. I completely understand that. The first time I had a fire breath orgasm experience, it so frightened me that I didn't do Tantra for another 10 years. That's how scared I was.
Oh, my God.
Yes. I basically, that was my first tantric experience. It was a workshop taught for women by a tantrika by the name of Jawala. I thought it was bogus. I was about ready to leave the room, and I had this fire breath orgasm before I had a chance to walk out. It never had a thing to do with my genitals. It was all in the base of my spine and went out the top of my head. I thought I saw the face of God, and it felt to me like I was having sex with God, you know, and whatever that even means. It just was so frightening. And I felt so unworthy of it that I stayed away from it for another 10 years. And this most recent Kundalini experience that I had was also scary because it opened up a door where I had these spontaneous muscular contractions for 30 days, and I didn't feel completely in control of it. And this is actually pretty well documented. It actually happens to some yoga masters, not at all in a sexual context, but, you know, just through the practice of meditation. And some people refer to it as a kriyas. Whatever you want to call it, it is a release of some very powerful energy. And it's also scary. I think of it as Pandora's box. You open it and there's no closing it. And sometimes there is a sense of wondering where is it going to go and how far will it go. And I would caution, you know, to proceed slowly for a variety of reasons. But one being so that you don't open the door to something that you're not ready or prepared to cope with. And I think it's important to honor that impulse to run away. If you need to run away, run away. What's nice, though, is to come up and knock on that door, to know that it's there, and then to see the edge of your fear, to see the edge of how much life and consciousness and awareness you're really capable of expanding into right now, and then be gentle with yourself and accept the fact that, you know, you're not ready to do it all today. That's just fine.
Well, it's a good thing that's fine.
I mean, Eric, I have a question here from Nicholas is asking me, could I comment on the importance of silence as a part of the breathing and meditation practice? And I'm not sure I agree with you, Nicholas, because I've actually found that ecstatic states of mind oftentimes are amplified through making noise. Now, I certainly don't think that one wants to be having a conversation, whether with your partner, with yourself, or in your head. But I do think that making noise can be a really, really good way of getting that energy raised up. And I very highly recommend finding even noises that resonate with you. Some people, when they're practicing this, might even want to do a mantra or a chant, but I've never actually used that except in my own meditation practice. I haven't used it during sacred sex, but I definitely recommend being vocal and allowing yourself to really engage with the noises that come naturally. Now, if there is somebody out there who prefer silence, and Nicholas, you may very well be one of them, and I'd love to hear more about that. But I would invite you to post on my Facebook page, and who knows, maybe I will learn another approach to this. Certainly as a sexologist, I know that we go out of our way to encourage people to connect with their ability to make noise, because it does tend to raise our ability to engage sexually, sensually, and spiritually. And believe it or not, Eric, we're out of time. We're going to be wrapping this up.
Oh, no.
I actually have got... Yes, I do. and Nicholas, thank you for that last comment there. He says he agrees with me in terms of sound. The Taoists suggest specific sounds. Yes. We're going to actually leave it on that note, Eric, and I hope the next time you and I get together to talk about sacred sex that you will be telling us about how you walked through that door and went a little further.
Ooh. All right, then.
Okay. All right. That's it for the Shame-Free Zone. Thanks, guys, for checking in on Facebook, and thank you, Eric. Really appreciate your patience in working with this delay in our broadcasting. Good night.
Thank you, Veronica.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you. Sering kesepian, kenapa tak mentus kabar berita?